bandwidth and hosting for the British Tech Network is provided by UK2.net. Innovative, affordable, and reliable web hosting. Yes, the weekend has started, and as a result, you've got to listen to us.
Cheers.
Yeah, those of you that are all in the chat room and thinking it's going to be a nice plush start to the weekend, no, you've got to listen to the trap that comes out from us. We're going to talk about photography. It's the Photography Week, and joining me, the usual panel, fantastic bunch, top left, Chris Forsman.
Hello.
How's it going, bud?
I feel like garbage.
Yeah, you got a nasty head cold.
Thanks.
Yeah. How's things... And in evidence of those things, you know the things I'm talking to.
Yeah.
Are those things okay?
I believe I do. We just heard from the doctor. Everything is 100% A-okay.
Oh, there we go. It's official. You can see it. There you go. The best photography that you'll see this week.
Yeah, what is this, like 0.2 megapixels? This is horrible. can't we put some research...
Well, yes,
you've
shot that on P3200 T Max, haven't you? That's why.
Heard it here first, folks.
I'll tell you, next time you tell me how good that iPhone 5 camera is, I'm just not going to believe you.
There you go, chat room. You are lucky people to know the official news. Forsman's going to be a daddy. Well done, mate. We've known for weeks, actually. We've known for weeks and weeks and weeks, but weren't allowed to say anything. It's why Chris has missed a few episodes. But, mate, you got to be chuffed.
I'm stoked.
Good, man.
Look, it has two arms and two legs and a head.
Congrats are abounding in the chat room. Well done, mate. Fine.
All the best ones do, Chris. All the best ones do.
Right.
Love to the girly girl as well and say well done to her. So, do you know sex and stuff like that? I mean, it's only 12 weeks, isn't it? So it's a bit difficult, I guess.
Well, I know enough about sex to do this.
I was going to say, leave the poor girl alone. She's
that wasn't what I meant, but yeah, okay.
No, it's...
You've got about 30 weeks before you get good sex information, if you know what I mean. Forget it. Let's move on with the photo. Yeah. Are you going to find out the sex, or are you going to keep it a secret till the day?
Oh, we're going to find out, sure.
Yeah, definitely. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we did that.
It's going to... I know it's going to take my girlfriend months to figure out a name, so... We already have a list a mile long 50, of potentials.
Whittling it down by 50% would give you at least a head start.
Right.
They're Americans. They don't even have boy and girl names. They just make them up.
No.
Made up name.
Ice cream tray. That sounds really good.
Brilliant. Well done, mate. Congratulations. And I hope you're both very happy. And when you know the sex, let us know, and we'll get the chat room to pick a name. Oh, there was another thing as well. Batwinch decided she wanted to do chat room picks at the end of the show. So, chat room, think of a pick for this week. Alex, how are you doing, mate? You feel pretty crap as well, apparently, don't you?
Yeah, but he's picked me up now. There's certain points in life that you just go, you know what, I don't care, I feel crap, but Chris is having a baby, so everything in the world is great.
Excellent. It doesn't get better than that.
No, it doesn't.
Ian wants to know in the chat room, has your missus said no to the names Ewan, Will, Alex or Kyle yet? Chris, no?
What's that?
Ian in the chat room wants to know, has your wife or girlfriend said no to Ewan, Will, Alex or Kyle yet as names? Ewan's pretty cool. My best man called his son Ewan after me. I was pretty chuffed by that.
Yeah.
He said, do you see the current? How much I said, I'm not calling my first son Nigel. No, it's not happening.
Oh, Nigel.
His name was Nigel. It's just a cool name if you're 43, but it's not cool if you're...
Oh, come on, you're being nice. It's not a cool name, whatever age you are.
Being nice to Nigel.
Oh, now.
Right, the week in photography news. Interesting start. Let's do the... it's all a conspiracy to begin with. A young fellow who was out taking a picture one day found a storm, and the storm cloud looked kind of really, really biblical. So he pulls over at the side of the road, whips out his camera, and gets an absolute doozy of a snapshot. There you go. That's the one. He works for the National Weather Service, and he's a volunteer. He's called Michael Galindo. and he took this picture. The problem is that the big cloud that's probably 35 miles across that he's taken a picture of is sat smack over the top of a power plant that's got real terrorism potential. And the FBI came around to have a word with him after his car was seen speeding away from the site. Chris, you said you wanted to talk about this one.
Yeah. I mean, when is enough enough with all this photography craziness?
Oh, I like this story.
I mean, well, it just makes the FBI look like jerks, right? I mean, no. Is it just me, or is it...
No, I think quite the opposite.
No?
I think this is a really good story for the FBI, because it shows, it shows diligence. I'll go on and read the rest of the story. This guy, Galindo's 26-year-old. He's got a squeaky clean police record. Mm-hmm. An FBI FBI agent David Pileggi, who sounds like he's like an Italian food.
David Pileggi
was satisfied with his explanation after a 20-minute questioning and left with a warning: just be careful next time where you take pictures. I think that's right. A perfectly proportional response.
But be careful next time. I mean, what was the guy doing? He was driving by taking pictures of a storm cloud, which is what he does as a volunteer job for the National Weather Service.
Ian in the chat room says, that's a crap picture. The composition's all over the place. He's left a bloody fence in the way.
Yeah, and also he didn't even bother sticking it out the window. I was thinking maybe the FBI should go over there to just criticise his technique.
Yeah.
It could get pulled in for a 2-week course in iPhone phonography.
He's done very well there. I thought that was quite a good story because the FBI showed that they were diligent, but they're not going over the top. The guy was just like, hey, come on, be careful, eh?
Yeah. He's probably gone in there and said, look, I work with a load of idiots, right? Just bear that in mind next time.
No, it's probably true.
Do you reckon if they emailed it through, that was cloud computing?
Oh, very good.
Very good. But
I got I saw an absolute corker of a cloud that looked like it was coming down into a tornado the other week coming up through Oxford. It wasn't, clearly, because it's England, but I was desperate to take a picture of it, and I wish I'd have been had somewhere to pull over, but it was so hard with the rain that I was going to get smashed in behind from a...
Didn't have time to check with the FBI, CIA, and the Special Fraud Squad to see if you were going to get in trouble for
it. I think it was one of the nuclear bases it was over the top of.
Yeah. Are you sure it wasn't coming out?
That could have been.
Here's the thing. How can you be careful about this?
You can't.
Here's the FBI is warning this guy, be careful next time. But how is he supposed to do? He had no idea what that was, any kind of considered to be a sensitive location. How would anyone know?
Yeah. I thought they handled it proportionally. It'll do. Alex, any thoughts?
Not much.
Yeah, it's nice that the Americans are getting it as well.
Yeah, there we go. That'll do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, maybe I have a different perspective on this, I think.
Betanova, cavity search.
I'm not used to getting billy clubbed out of a mall for taking pictures, so.
Adobe have released version 1.4 of their DNG file. Which is supposedly now more attractive. It is lossy compression, but it's supposed to help with HDRs and panoramas. And there's a suggestion that Apple could be adopting this as their new standard for output from their iPhones, which, I mean, that would be an enormous leap forward in the mobile camera market for phones, certainly. What's the initial thought process on this? I mean, what's the background to the story? Why is there a... And it's an update, presumably, but I don't see that it's doing a great deal more than...
Well, it is in certain respects. I mean, the first respect is the a lot of raw files. I mean, for instance, Nikon's NEF format has a compressed version anyway. But lots of raw formats don't. They are just the full-size raw file, and then you have to play with them before you can compress them. This is a universal standard for raw files, which is compressible. And a couple of things that this thing does differently from the old version, for instance, they say this helps with panoramas. It does, and the reason it does, is quite simple. In the old days, all these DNG files, if you said you wanted a certain ratio when you took it in the camera, the DNG files threw away everything else that wasn't wanted in what you wanted to save. So if you wanted a panorama that was a ratio of 1 by 10, it would throw away everything above the 1 by 10 ratio. But what this does, which is quite clever, it compresses the original file, the whole file, and then also gives you a version which is the either compressed or uncompressed panorama. So if you do shoot panorama out of, say, your iPhone, which is a good example, it still keeps all the information for everything else, but it compresses that, so it doesn't take up too much room. So you can go back and say, actually, I like that panorama, but I'd actually like that version of it, or I've taken a, not a 4x3, because there's loads of different 3x2s, there's loads of different ratios. I've taken that, but I've actually changed my mind. So you've got what you took, but you can also, if you like, rewind, go back to the original file, and then reprocess it to a different ratio. So there's lots of bits and pieces in there, and they've worked out a way of making the compression work, but not in the way that JPEG does, and once you've sort of compressed it, you're in trouble. It compresses it. It's not lossless, but you lose a hell of a lot less than you do when you compress something like a JPEG. It's more like LZW, but with a tiny bit of lossy, as opposed to JPEG, where it's gone, and there's nothing you can do to recover it.
I think, I mean, we spoke last night briefly on the Big Show. The thing that most people consider with RAW, and I started writing an article on blowing some of the myths around RAW, is that RAW isn't everything of everything that the sensor can possibly capture. It's naturally compressed by the formation of a file to start with anyway. And I think I'm right in saying Nikon has got two formats of RAW, and both of those are compressed in the
well, you've got one that isn't. You've got one that isn't compressed.
Right.
Know? Well, it's compressed as in RAW is a compressed file.
But you're not setting that. That depends on the model of camera that you've bought.
Yes.
You could have the compression format.
Yes, there's also one that comes together which you can compress the saving of your RAW file. It doesn't come down to JPEG standards, but it's massively compressed.
Yeah, if you see RAW 12 or something like that, it's a 12-bit compression or a 16-bit compression or an 8-bit compression, those kind of things.
But the beauty of a DNG file, it's universal. It can be converted into, it can be converted out of, and it's basically a standard that if people pick up on it, it's a standard RAW file.
Yeah.
Because people don't realize, not only every make of every like Nikon, Canon have a different file, every camera has a different file. Mm-hmm. The 800 and the 600 are different to the 300 and the 700. They're completely different. You cannot.
Well, I mean, this is, I remember when D&G came out. I mean, it must have been close to 10 years ago, I feel like. And this is exactly how Adobe pitched it. It's like, instead of having, you know, these 45 different RAW formats, and every time a new camera comes out, they have to rewrite Camera Raw, they have to rewrite Lightroom, you know, every app that processes RAW data has to rewrite their software to accommodate this new camera. You know, Adobe's been trying to pitch DNG as this like universal format, and for whatever reason, honestly, I'm not even sure what it is, because I think Adobe just kind of offers it as like a free license, like, just please use this.
Yeah, I mean, that was another good point that we made last night. I said, you know, everyone was talking about proprietary formats on cameras and so on. As far as I'm aware, DNG is open. And it's an egalitarian process by Adobe. There's some questions in the chat room on this, some of which we maybe answer and some of which we can't. Why can't everyone just shoot DNG? Well, my understanding of that is the fact that it's like saying, why can't everything be Word? Pages has its own format and it stores it in Pages format, and it isn't going to work straight away in Word without some kind of conversion process. And each camera has its own processor, and it outputs a type of file based on the OS that it's running, and that's the end of it.
Yeah, it's very similar to that. It's proprietary Nikon cell, Nikon RAW conversion software.
Yeah.
A lot of the cameras do.
Yeah, and I think when you started off with digital photography and it was the Wild West, when the idea of RAW was abounding, RAW was written up by each camera manufacturer, and they're throwing away an awful lot of development time in that to then start processing to a completely different file that's owned by Adobe. And when Adobe is the standard, who knows what Adobe's going to do with its proprietary format as well. So it's not good to say, why can't everyone be DNG, and then Adobe owns the world all of a sudden. And the other question is, if you convert from Camera Raw or any of the other Raw files into DNG, do you lose any information once converted? My understanding to that is, effectively, no.
No.
No, I mean,
you might lose odd bits, but
it's more of it's a conversion rather than you know, at the moment, if you open up something and convert it into, say, JPEG or something that's a compressed format, what you're actually doing is you're actually creating a TIFF file the best you can possibly do from a compression, and then you're recompressing it. But what this does, it's not compressing into a third party and back again. It's literally taking the noughts and ones, knowing what a nought from one from a NEF file would be in a DNG file, and literally just recoding them. It's not actually a three-way process, not coding out and then coding back in. It's the direct conversion.
Ian in the chat room saying, don't go there with the RAW thing, Ewan. You know how much trouble you got in last time with RAW versus JPEG. I've got the article. I need to finish it, really, because I just got too busy at the start of the year. But there needs to be an article on what RAW actually is and blow some of the bunkerman myths around it, because lots of people, especially amateurs, look at RAW and think it's Nirvana, and it's a very, very simple process that you don't get an awful lot more from JPEG in certain circumstances. And people think that there's things in, you know, it's made of unicorn horn stardust that's sprinkled on the sensor before they shoot it, and it's not. It's absolute rubbish.
But two things. First of all, RAW, what is it good for? Absolutely nothing. And secondly, more importantly, for something like camera phones and the iPhone, now they're producing large files, a form of RAW, a DNG, would be brilliant. But I mean, you can have your JPEG, you can have this, that, and the other. But even if it's a sort of a really compressed RAW file, which means that a lot of the low noise and stuff, you can actually take it out of the camera. And if you've got the wherewithal or the money and you're using something like Photoshop or, you know, a proper RAW converter, you can at least lessen some of the crappiness of, say, low light. Whereas at the moment, because you can only get the single JPEG output, your stuff, there is nothing you can do about it. It really should.
Yeah, you're kind of stuck with whatever they've programmed into the iPhone, exactly, or any particular camera. You're programmed with what they've programmed in.
I mean, to have that option, even if it's something you have to turn on and jump through a few hoops to get out of the camera, and it's worth having it for the 10% of people that would say, this is a really tricky... I mean, the camera could say to you, in tricky situations, would you like us to save you a RAW file as well as a JPEG? You know, just have that as an option. So the camera says, you know what, this is a dodgy one for us. We'll save the RAW file for you, and it's up to you whether you want to keep it or delete it afterwards. It's not beyond the wit of the Apple programmers to work that out.
I think you've got to be careful as well, though. I mean, one of the things we were talking about the Panorama program on the iPhone at Elmug on Monday night. And they showed a picture up on the screen and said, what do you think? I said, well, it's done really, really well. It's craply lit here. There's lots and lots of people. There's a tremendous amount of detail. Lots and lots of changes from one pixel to the next in colour spectrum. And you've got to bear in mind, in low light, your camera is guessing. That's why all of a sudden you'll get a solid red or a solid blue pixel, because it's looking for something and it's making it up as it goes along, just like your eye does. But your brain's really good at filling in those gaps. The camera's not. It's working on algorithms, and it's working about the difference between this pixel to this pixel to this pixel to this pixel on a 20-pixel cross-reference of graduation of colour and that kind of thing, and it gets it wrong a lot. It doesn't really make an awful lot of difference, and like you say, the recoverability of RAW is there, but then you're into file sizes and processing, and does your grandma want to process RAW?
No, but I'd say, but the option is what I'm asking for.
Yeah, I agree with that bit. Definitely, no question.
I've been griping for years, really, that the camera app doesn't even have exposure compensation. Like, there's no... It has one program line, and that's it. And it's just gonna follow that program line, and no, you know, I mean, you can tap around the image and try to get, you know, a better exposure bias, but you know, there's no real control, and it would be, I mean, the sensor and the processor that Apple is using for the camera is completely capable of it, but they just don't expose the functionality, even in APIs, for third parties to develop something to do more like manual exposure and things like that. And I think it would be cool if Apple even if at least expose the functionality from APIs and let third party developers like run with it. Like, you know, camera app's not going to have it because grandma's not going to do it. But hey, here's the APIs. If you can come up with something and people want to pay you you know, $2.99 or whatever for your app, then great.
Yeah.
I think that's a really good way to handle it, from my point of view, anyway.
We've got Windrider's put a little helpful thing on the raw image format from Wikipedia in there. And he's put down, surely the purpose of raw format is to save with minimum loss of information data obtained from the sensor and the conditions surrounding the capture of the image, metadata. Mm-hmm. Well, yeah,
why isn't he on the show?
Well, no, he's cut and pasted that. Come on, be fair.
Oh, well, there you go.
Leica is supposedly going to bring out a mirrorless camera, a compact system, and it's been outed thanks to an interview with a magazine where there was a hint about a compact camera system coming, and now they've all fallen out and they don't want to talk to each other anymore, and things were said in confidence that were meant to be kept in confidence and haven't been. And there's a little concept shot here of what the, like, it looks very nice, I have to say.
Yeah, it's pretty.
It looks very nice. It doesn't make me want to buy a Leica. Wait, no, it makes me want to buy a Leica. It doesn't make me to part with $6,500 or $7,000 worth of cash for it. But
what I don't understand, aren't the M-series cameras already mirrorless?
I don't know what this is about. It's a compact camera system to take on Panasonic Olympus, Sony, and Samsung. So apparently this was going to be released at Photokina 2012, so it obviously wasn't. Uh-huh. But that would suggest that there's more a budget Leica coming to take on those people. But although the M-series of the Deschinger compact has the definition of a compact camera system, the publication understood the executives to mean a mirrorless camera like the ones that the companies listed above would have been focusing on in recent years. There was repeated mention of interviews of the camera that would fall in between the M9 and the X1, which is the larger sensor compact. Photokina came and went last month, but a new camera system was nowhere to be seen. Leica did, however, announce two new M-series cameras that differ a good deal from the previous generations on price, etc.
Yeah, it seems to me that Leica had made a sort of decision to, say, go into a slightly lower price range market, and they'd sort of, you know, ummed and ahed about it, but something's happened. Somewhere along the line, they've either decided not to, or they've realised that the Leica badge, if they do make a, should we say, a cheaper model, it might affect every other part of their range, and they can't justify the higher prices. And what this story sort of says, it's a business story rather than a photo story, that says somebody that should have known better has been spouting out a bit. But instead of saying, yes, we've had a decision to make and we've actually decided that we might not move along that line for various private reasons, he's just basically come out and told two separate journalists, one of which I know of quite well, who, you know, works for the British Journal of Photography, so it's not, you know, it's not a throwaway magazine.
No.
They sort of said, no, I didn't say that. And they're both saying, yeah, you did. But, you know, the two guys don't work for each other. They don't work with each other. And they both said, yeah, you did. We were both in the hotel room and you both. And it's a bit silly, really. It's enough for somebody that should know better to lose their job. So he should really just say, yeah, maybe not.
The benefit of recording interviews.
Yeah, exactly.
Anything to add, Chris?
I'm just looking at these quotes. It says, I mean, the Leica CEO here, he says, it's more than an idea. You will see something at the next Photokina. That's what he said in 2011. Mm-hmm. So, I mean,
who knows?
It's clear they hinted at that.
Yeah, they were trying to let out that something was a coming. But,
trouble is share prices. You know, you've got to be careful.
I suspect they were investigating something, it didn't work or whatever, or it's not ready, and now they're trying to save face. That's what it sounds like to me.
Yeah, I mean, Jim in the chat room is saying that they brought out a new M9. That's the rangefinder one, isn't it? £3,900 was the one that they brought out of Photokina, but it wasn't what the one that was hinted at and stuff. So, oh, blimey, it's all complicated and nasty and horrible. If you haven't tried them yet, have you tried an iFi card? Because they've just gone to 16 gig, including Wi-Fi, SDHC card. I've got an 8 gig version of these, and as an SD card, it works just fine and dandy. I haven't tied it to my laptop and used it in a studio or anything like that for bloody ages, but Chris, you're going to say that you use this loads, aren't you? Did we talk about this last week?
Yeah, I think I have my little Olympus that I use here when I'm doing like pictures for stories and reviews and stuff, and it just beams the pictures right to my MacBook Air, so I don't have to like plug it in, and it just sends it right to a folder. So it's really handy when I'm shooting around the house. I think we were talking about this last week that it would be it could be a really good solution for folks in the studio, but probably not remotely.
£100 for an SD card? So you're talking $150 for an SD card? That's a lot of money. 16 gig.
Yeah.
The thing is, it's just replacing something that should be in cameras as standard anyway. That's right. My objection right. to the whole thing. I mean, if you think about the technology and how small the technology that goes into
it
this
card. It fits in an SD card, yeah.
Exactly. And you think about that, I'm sure, I don't care what camera you're talking about, you'd be able to stick one of these bits of gubbins in. For a few
Nikon has that little thing that snaps into a couple of their new DSLRs now, right?
Yeah, but it's all extra.
It snaps in.
Yeah,
it?
Exactly. Yeah.
It looks ridiculous, but the 60, right, has it built in.
Hmm. But, you know, the whole thing, I mean, again, I mean, this is something that Ewan's talked about before anyway. I mean, the new Nikon 800 and the 800E aren't compatible with it at the moment. But the problem is no one actually knows why. Everything about it should work. They've tested all the Wi-Fi, you know, they've tested the numbers, and it should work. It does work in as much as you can use it to link to your Wi-Fi at home if you're on the same network. But there is a new-ish thing that the iFi cards have, which is called Direct Link.
Yeah.
Which it makes its own personal hotspot. And mm-hmm. so you don't need to actually have a Wi-Fi network around you. It creates a Wi-Fi network. But that's not working with the 800 or the 800E, but they're not sure why, which is normally you wait for a firmware update and it fixes it. But at the moment, no one can work out what the fix is.
Well, this card doesn't create a Wi-Fi hotspot. It latches onto Wi-Fi hotspots, either your MiFi or one that you create from your MacBook or something like that. And at Elmug, this was given away as a raffle prize in 8 gig format. And I did say, it's a fantastic item, but make sure your camera firmware is up to date, because sure. if it's not, this won't work with it. And, yeah, and they were worried that they weren't going to sell tickets because I said it. I'm like, no, it's a fantastic product, but make sure that your firmware is up to date. Because when I bought one of these, I had a right old rigmarole getting my firmware updated on my 1DS Mark II so it would work.
Yeah, I mean, the problem with what Nikon are having, well, I don't know if it's Nikon's problem or iFi's, is... Yes, you make a network with your laptop, but that's, you know, with your laptop. But this will only work if you're in a Wi-Fi zone, e.g. at home or in a studio, whereas you link to your studio Wi-Fi and then your laptop links to your studio Wi-Fi and you're going through a Wi-Fi router. It works, but it's not working in the direct mode, which is what it's supposed to do. But at the moment, no one knows why.
Mac Jim says 6D has got Wi-Fi and GPS built in, so... Go by 6D.
Yep.
Perfect. Joby have released a fantastic little strap. It's a 3-in-1 type thing going on.
Yeah, that you three-way.
Screw into, yeah, someone said to have a three-way, everybody. Wow. And it screws into the base or the side of your Canon or your Nikon or whatever into the standard tripod strap. And it gives you either a wrist strap or you zing-zang it like it's a little bungee thingy and it goes on a cord around your neck. $40 is the price. What do you reckon?
I can see problems.
Go ahead.
Well, I mean, yes, I can see the picture. The neck strap part, lovely. Okay, looks great and it's nice and thick and all the rest of it. But, I mean, you and you've got kids and Chris, soon you're going to have this problem. You have anything around your neck and you have a little child with you, they tend to grab it. I don't know why. Right. It could be a necklace. It could be anything you want. Now, with a normal strap, you've got a 3-inch wide piece of material wrapping around your neck. And when someone pulls it, it sort of pulls you and it's uncomfortable. This thing has got something that looks like a cheese cutting wire. And if someone pulls that around your neck, they're going to end up garrotting you. And I just looked at that. My instant thought was, no way. They'd kill me. My kids would have probably cut my head off by now, pulling that.
Well, to be fair, though, Alex, it has got a padded section at the back. And if you get that in the wrong place, then maybe, yes, you could garrote yourself. But it's piano wire.
it bothered me.
But the thing that got me with this was this strap can hold up to 90 pounds of camera, lenses and accessories. That's 40 frigging kilos.
You could have your kids hanging off it.
I was going to say, you could carry two children on that, mate. 40 yeah. kilos of camera. I can't think of 40 kilos of camera anywhere.
Well, I suppose I could put all my 10.8 plate cameras on it, but I'd look bloody stupid walking down the street with them round my neck.
Are they at 40 kilos?
Oh, if I put a couple... Yeah, they're pretty damn heavy.
Chris probably weighs 90 pounds.
Oh, I weigh a little bit more than that, but...
It's called your Chris... It's a Chris strap.
Yeah.
From Joby, the Chris strap. No. All right, then, fair enough. We'll leave that one alone.
I can't think of anything that isn't rude.
What was the camera you wanted to talk about, Alex? Was it
the camera?
Not the Nikon.
No, I tell you
was
what.
Was it the NXS1?
No, it wasn't. It was the Sony Cybershot DSC RX100.
Right, mate. You wanted to talk about this, and you're going to have to explain why. The DSC RX100 digital camera, 20 megapixels, 3x optical zoom, and 3-inch LCD, now available on Amazon for £472.90.
Right. The reason being is I have two customers in the last couple of weeks that said, I bought this little Sony, and I really like it. And both of them, I had a look, and I thought, you know what? You might be right. You might be onto something here.
Now, the RX100 is the one with the full frame sensor, right?
It's an inch size. It's an inch sensor, the same size as the Nikon one. I think it's the same sensor.
They announced one at Photokina that has a full frame 35 millimeter size sensor.
It's the XMOS CMOS sensor.
Okay. So I took the trouble to get hold of one of these and have a good play with it. Because quite often, as you guys are, and obviously on this show, we get asked, you know, what's a good recommendation for a small compact camera. Now, I know this isn't cheap, but I had a play with this camera, and in my view, it has blown completely out of the water any other compact camera I have ever used.
Really?
Yes.
Why?
I picked it up, and it didn't feel like a piece of rubbish plastic. This is an aluminium body. It's very small, but it feels so tough. I wouldn't have wanted to hammer nails in the wall with this thing because it might have broken, but I tell you what, it felt that you could hammer nails in the wall with this thing. It was really, really robust. The rear screen, I mean, I'm using an iPhone Retina, I'm using a Mac, whatever that thing's called, an iPad Retina. This screen has got the same sort of clarity. I was blown away. It's an OLED screen, and I've always had issues with those. The screen on the back of this thing is incredible. It's the whole size, so I don't know what size it is. I could probably look it up. It's 3 inches. There you go.
3 inches.
Screen. I was playing with macro, and it was a bit complicated because it wanted to only let me do automatic macro, which I think is the settings.
Well, based on the image that they've got on the website here for automatic macro, I'd have let it.
That's the point. I was moving it. I actually started playing around with it in a restaurant. I was just moving it around the table to see, and I sort of moved it over the... Is they called the frongs of a fork? I can't remember what they're called now. And it just...
Tines.
Yeah,
tines. That's the word.
Zoomed in, macro, on the top, the tip of this fork, and I was just... It was brilliant. It was absolutely fantastic. I played with it. I took pictures. The low light was exceptional. I mean, I did these indoors. I mean, there are a few little issues with it. The ring around the front, which is programmable, you can do full manual on this, but you can change the settings for the ring around the front. So you say, I want to change that ring to aperture. So you can turn the ring and it changes the aperture. You can say to that, I want the ring to be ISO. It doesn't matter what it is. So you've got manual and you've got it at your fingertips. I mean, I was playing around mainly with aperture with this ring, and I just set it to aperture and I was turning it around, and the depth field for a compact camera was incredible. I couldn't recommend this highly enough, and I know it's been out a few months, and as Chris has said, and they've announced a new one, I would say that there's a couple of things in this that I'd get rid of because it's not needed. There's a few gimmicky things in this that, as a pro, I'm not interested in. This is far, far better than an amateur compact camera, and for £472, I'd have said it's worth the money. I would have, yeah, I would hands up say this is the best compact camera I've ever used.
It says it's effective 20.2 megapixels, and the word effective always scares the crap out of me. F1.8 Carl Zeiss Sono lens, which I've got the 1.8 on my Canon G12, and that's, you can manually control f-stop on that, and that looks really, really nice.
The thing is, because of the actual size of the physical sensor, your depth of field is even better.
Mm.
1.8 on that size sensor gives you a much shallower depth of field than the 1.8 on the smaller sensor that you'll get in Canon. I was actually, it's the first time I've ever picked up a compact and was absolutely blown away by it.
Chris, anything to add?
No. I think in the comments someone mentioned that the one I was thinking of was the RX1 they announced at Photokina. It's the same basic idea, but it's got a fixed 35 f2 lens and a 24 megapixel full frame sensor. But I think camera makers now understand they can't just keep making the same crappy point and shoots, because now people all have that exact same functionality built into their smartphone, and they're realizing that if they want to attract, people to buy point and shoot cameras, it needs to stand out. And I think all those things that Alex was talking about, you know, just the amazing close focusing ability and the sharpness and the really bright, sharp viewfinder and everything. I mean, those are the things that it's going to have to stand out. It's going to have to be unique. And I think that hopefully what we'll see less of are the Canon and Nikon and stuff. They just churn out these like 40, you know, they have like 40 different current models at any one time. But, you know, it's so confusing for consumers. It's so confusing. There's just a mass of cameras. It's like separated by like $25 or $30. And there's really no way for them to make a decision about any of this stuff because it's so complicated. There's just so many things to look at. And I'm hoping that models like these that will, you know, we'll see more of this where it's something really unique and outstanding and really stands out. And, it's something someone's going to say, this is the reason why I want to use a camera besides just my smartphone.
Excellent. It's £475 if you want to buy it on Amazon at the moment. Brand new as well. Not too bad. Last story then. Pentax is flirting with the full frame. Chris, you thought about this one. What's your thoughts around it? There was an interview between DC Watch and Toshiyuki Kitazawa, and they're talking about, A, getting a full-frame DSR out on the market after 2013, which I've got to say that sounds a little bit long in the tooth to be thinking about developing a camera, and also that they're confirmed that there's a 645D successor in the offing as well.
I think that might help explain some of the recent price drop too. If they're going to come out with a newer model soon, they might be wanting to clear out older inventory. I think full frame, it's a smart move for Pentax, even though Pentax went all in on APS-C size sensors, and all their new lenses are designed for those type of sensors, but they still make and they still have a lot of lenses that are great full frame lenses. Let's be honest, like 80% of the market is Canon and Nikon. You know, that's just a fact of the matter. Pentax knows this. You know, Sony knows this. That these other manufacturers are really going after much smaller parts of the market. But from my history as a Pentax user, I can tell you that most Pentax users are extremely loyal to the brand. And honestly, you know, if things had been differently, and I could have, you know, kept my, I had an enormous collection of Pentax lenses and cameras. If I could have kept that all, financial things happened in the past that just made, you know, I had to make some tough choices, and one of them was get rid of all this and settle on one camera, and that ended up being a Canon at the time. But those lenses were amazing. I mean, they were really good lenses, and I got them pretty cheap. So, I mean, people who have been invested in Pentax for a long time, they're going to appreciate this. And Pentax is going to sell quite a bit. Most of them are going to be in Asia, frankly. But I think especially like their K5 and the K30 cameras show that they can make, again, they can make something that's unique, that really appeals to their user base. I think they'll be fine with it. It's not going to be a huge deal, but I think for Pentax users, they're going to really appreciate it.
I think the thing with Pentax, and we've always said it, is that their trouble is not that they don't make good cameras, because they make great cameras, but what they do is end up making a camera that looks like a Lego brick or something that's got some gimmick to it, like it's painted bright red, or you know, rather than just sticking to, here's a great camera. And the K5 stuff that we looked at the other week, you know, one of the things that set that apart as being really worthwhile was the Batman rubber on the outside. You know, the thing right. looked substantially, looked the part, didn't it?
Right.
Alex, any thoughts? Sorry, no. Chris, go ahead.
Finish I was on. Just going to add that, I mean, they have done that in the past, like the Pentax LX, you know, the original 645 and 67 cameras. I mean, you know, Pentax has definitely made cameras that look the part and, you know, were good, solid cameras and weren't gimmicky. And I agree with you that that's been a problem recently, as they've been a little too gimmicky with some of their stuff lately. And it's, for me as a photographer, it's a total turnoff. So yeah. I don't know. I can't speak to the average consumer, but for me as a photographer, it's a turnoff.
Yeah. Chat room is saying K5 and K30 sound like submarine designations. which one would be called the Widowmaker? And Matt Jim says Pentax DSLRs are getting better and better with each update, but and they've still got a loyal following, but they're not getting new customers, I think, so that's exactly the point that we're making.
I mean, I think they need, it's that middle space that they need to find. They've done quite well with the sort of budget point and shoot compact. They've done brilliantly well with the 645D. They need something akin to a professional-like DSLR. At the moment, all their DSLRs, they're just sitting there. I mean, Pentax should never have sort of been overtaken by Sony, but they have been. Yeah. But they really need to put something between the 645D and their decent point and shoot. And they will. They'll get a full-frame camera. There's going to be, I mean, I just, please don't try and come up with some new format that, you know, the old film full-frame size lenses don't fit. There's a glut. You can look around in secondhand shops and look on eBay and various places. You can get really good quality Pentax full frame, you know, 20-year-old lenses. They just need to have a DSLR that's full frame of a reasonable quality that you can go out and buy a bucket loads of lenses for $1,000. You know, that's what they need to do. And they'll be right back in the game, because historically, it's out there. It's just waiting for them to get their act together.
Good. I agree. I think Pentax have really got an opportunity, but it's whether they seize it or not. You're exactly right. Questions then. First one from Lee in Bromsgrove. Hi, chaps. I wrote the other day, and now on your recommendation, I've bought the Canon 70-200 f4 lens. It wasn't their recommendation, yep. I don't think. And I'm very happy. I wouldn't have gone for it if it hadn't been for you guys. You rock.
Yes, we do.
Thank you, Lee. I'm now interested in macro lens for my 7D. I've got some extension tubes, a Canon 50mm 1.8 already, but I'd like an inexpensive macro lens to get into macro photography. Or am I better off sticking with the 50mm and the tubes? I've had a dabble with the tubes already, but don't find them particularly easy to use. Any advice? Thanks and keep up the great work. Love the show, Lee from Bromsgrove. 50mm tubes, macro tubes shouldn't be hard to use. My thought when I read that was, are you trying to look at the thing at quite a low oblique angle? If you're going to do macro, you want to get yourself perpendicular to your subject if you're worried about the depth of field, because don't forget you're shortening your depth of field to microscopic levels. And if you start shooting across something, you're going to be potentially very upset with it, because, you know, very small changes in depth are going to produce huge changes in blur.
Well, one of the things with macro, if you're using a lens, if you're, say, using a 50-60mm macro, it's an awful lot easier to physically control the camera. Once you start sticking, you know, tubes on it, you've actually got a larger object to balance. I mean, yes, if you're using a tripod and you're trying to shoot something static with macro, then tubes make no difference at all.
Yeah.
If you're standing in the garden trying to take the stamen of a flower handheld with 100 millimeters. Yeah, with 100 millimeters of tubes on the front of your 50mm lens or whatever it is you've got, you're really going to have a problem. Yes, it's a lot easier to use a macro lens because it does the macro internally. You know, the zooming in and out is sort of the macroness, if that's not a real word, but you know what I mean, is actually done within the physical size of the lens you've got. It's so much easier, but it depends what you're trying to do. If you're doing static setups on a tripod, it will make no difference at all.
I agree. Mr.
I was going to give some recommendations if you want to drop some money. So the 7D is a APS-C style crop sensor. Canon makes a 60mm f/2.8 macro specifically for that EFS mount, ultrasonic focusing. It's a nice solid lens. That's $400. Tamron, which is I've had a few Tamron lenses in my day, and they've been really happy with them. And I think that their 90mm f/2.8 macro is one of the sharpest macro lenses I've ever used. It's a little bit longer focal length. You're going to get more magnification, and I think it was you talking about your depth of field being really shallow. Yeah. But it's amazingly sharp. It's $499 in Canon mount from Amazon. I don't know if that's... There's also a $50 rebate you can get on that right now, too. So, you know, $400, $450, $50. Either lens would be an excellent option if that's something you want to consider, an extra lens. And, you know, macro lenses usually also make good portrait lenses, too.
Yeah.
The focal lengths are similar. And that's sort of the beauty, is like you don't only have to use it for macro stuff. You can use it for other things too, if the focal length works for you for whatever you're doing. So
okay.
I'd consider those options if you don't mind spending a little bit of money.
Yeah, I mean the 100 is good. The only thing to say with the 100 is if you're going up to 100 millimeters, because it's
sensor.
The 7D's crop sensor, you're at 1.6, so you're 160mm. So good. Thanks, Lee. Let us know how it goes on. But I would stick with the tubes, to be honest. I've never bought a macro lens. Never. Dear Alex, Ewan and Chris and Kevin, I want to shoot some slow motion video asking around on Twitter and Facebook. I was told that slow-mo is better at 720p rather than 1080p. Is this true? Surely I'd lose out on quality with 720p over 1080. Hope you can help. Regards, David Beale, Cornwall. Start us off, Chris.
Oh, excuse me. Have Alex go. Please.
All right, I'll start us off. I mean, the thing to mention here, David, is that 720p and 1080p is not a measure of quality for a start. It's a measure of size. So it's the number of lines of what you're shooting in your video. Looking at that, if people are saying shoot 720 rather than 1080 for slow-mo, the only thing I can say from having used a GoPro is that a lot more cameras at 720 will give you 60 frames a second, whereas at 1080, I don't know any cameras that give you 60 frames a second that are under a couple of grand. And even then, you probably... 5D doesn't give you that and that kind of stuff, so...
The RX100
does. The RX100 does. So it gives you 1080 at 60 frames a second.
Yep.
Yeah. But that's the
first one I'd ever seen that did it. That's why I've got
the range. Right, but okay, it's a rarity then. I would say that there is no difference whatsoever between 720 and 1080 for quality of slow-mo. It's got its frames per second for slow-mo, sure.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you will get a crisper image at 1080p, but it's just like you said, there are very few cameras that will shoot.
But that's only because it's
high enough
bigger
frame rates. Right.
It's not quality. Alex, anything to add on that question? Question two?
No, one of the reasons people, like you say, people say shoot at 720 because of, for the very most part, 720 is all you can do. And what they should have said is shoot at 60 frames a second and convert. Yeah. And then by saying that, you would have been shooting at 720 for 90% of cameras. Yeah. So that's really what they're telling you. They're not actually telling you to shoot at 720. They're telling you to shoot at 60 frames a second.
Yeah,
I think we were even talking about this earlier today at ours, because one of our writers wanted to get a newer Canon DSLR so she could shoot video with it, and she was saying that, oh, I'm just going to go and get the 5D Mark III, which is a lot of money to move up from. I think she has an older Rebel right now. So one of the other guys pointed out that the S100 point and shoot, which is a great, great, you know, point and shoot. And it will do 120 frames per second at 720p. Right. So you can get really, really slow-mo effect there.
Yeah, I mean, at 720p, if you drag it out in Final Cut to 1080 on a bed, I don't think you're going to see a huge difference. It'll look just fine. As long as it's shot in decent light, there's your key part.
It is an interesting fact. On the Sony spec things, it's not 60 frames a second. It says 1080p or 1080i. High definition video at 59.94 frames per second. So I was wrong.
That's
I didn't
crap.
Know.
That's a crap. That's, don't buy it.
That's NTSC standard, because it's 29.97 frames per second, not actually 30.
No, I just didn't want to give out the wrong information in case we're
right.
The emails will be forthcoming. Last question then. Hey, fellas, my next-door neighbour's daughter wants to become a photographer and asked me whether I thought it was a good idea. Listening to the depressing answers you gave last week, I'm not sure I gave the best advice. If someone thinks they want to be a photographer, what route should they take to achieve that goal, and how should they look to develop their skills? Peter Cockcroft in Newcastle. Alex, start us off.
You know, I read this earlier and I was thinking, you know what, I want to give some honest advice.
Go for it.
No.
Don't be stupid.
What I would suggest is look for a job or career where photography is sort of a side issue. I know it sounds silly, but I don't know. I know people that have got work at the moment because they say worked in libraries, but libraries that do reproductions of work, as in part of the libraries, you can order a copy of a print they've got in the library. And so they've got into photography by a sideline of being a copyist in the library. So now they've got a job that's paying them. They've got they're taking pictures and they're making money from the fact they're making pictures. And that's a step forward. It's a move up. There's so many, I mean, we'll all get it because we are lucky enough to make a living through photography. There's so many people that want to take pictures and they're good enough to take pictures. It's just too few jobs available that you can make a living from making pictures. So what [S2] Right. [S1] I'd suggest is look at your second interest, if you like, and see if you can get your second interest to include photography as part of the career, and then maybe jump sideways once you're already established. But it's the getting established in the first place which is the killer. Mm. I mean, I work in art, and I take photographs. Now, I couldn't go out tomorrow and become a wedding photographer. There's too many people that do it, and there's too many people that do it better than I could. But what I can say is, I know the art world, I know the artists, I know the dealers, I've got a reputation for being safe and careful and trustworthy, and I take a good picture. So it's a side part of what I do. So that's the way I'd go ahead.
Hmm. Okay, well done. Any advice, Chris?
I like where Alex is going with this, and I would say when it comes to learning the craft, get a camera, use it whenever you can. There's no substitute for just exploring, finding your eye or your vision, you know, being able to like have your own unique, look to your images. And the only way to do that is just to try it until you're happy. You know, there's of course, I mean, there's college courses and training, you know, training certificates and things like that you can get. And what I would say is if you were happy, you know, by getting a camera and shooting all the time and that still interests you, then, you know, take those courses and that'll kind of give you some technical background to kind of add to your own exploration. But like Alex said, you know, I would not expect. And I remember even almost 20 years ago thinking I'm going to be a photographer. That's what I'm going to do. And learning everything I could. I mean, I knew everything about every lens and every camera that was manufactured at the time. I knew everything about films and chemicals. And, you know, this is before digital, obviously. And, you know, I shot all the time. I took pictures of everything. I mean, to the point where it almost annoyed some of my friends. And I was like, this is what I'm going to do. And when I got down to, you know, working with clients and trying to talk people into hiring me and things like that, then I got really uncomfortable. And it just wasn't, something I was very good at, I guess, maybe marketing or something. So if you want to make a living being a photographer, you have to be really good at kind of sometimes sucking up to people and willing to make compromises, with your artistic vision. And those are just things that I wasn't comfortable with. And so I just knew I was never going to make a living being a photographer without being able to do those things. So I think Alex's advice is really smart, to look at a job where, you know, and it's something I get to do at ours all the time. I get to take pictures of you know, do product photography, which I love doing, whenever I do a review of anything. So, you know, I still get to do that. Sometimes when I interview people, I'll take pictures of them. So I get to do some portraits. You know, again, something I really love doing. So, it's, you know, I don't get to make a living at it, but I get to do it often enough that I'm still pretty happy that my job involves photography.
Yeah, I mean, I think one of those things is like, if you talk about taking a qualification, life gets easier with qualifications. It opens doors for you, but it doesn't actually necessarily teach you anything. Mm-hmm. Practicing is a big part of it. And I think one of the things that I do whenever I get new cameras, new lenses, is I go out in the garden and I set test shots up and I learn what that piece of equipment is going to do or not do for me. My niece came up 4 years ago to live with us while she was going to nanny for us when Bryony was born. And she said, I want to be a photographer. Okay, here's a camera, there's a lens, go out in the garden, take me 10 interesting pictures. And she came back in, she said, that's really hard. There you go.
Yeah.
That's what it's like. Someone gives you a picture of a nut and a bolt or sews you a machine and says, make it look interesting. And you've got to find the angle that makes it look interesting. And you talk about compromising your artistic vision there, Chris. That's great if you get someone who gives you an artistic vision. More often than not, I just want some pictures of that. Go and create something interesting from something that's actually just a shiny piece of metal that folds a piece of other metal. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's hard. That's really hard. But if you can go, if someone can give you an egg and an egg cup and a spoon and say, right, shoot an interesting image, and you can create stuff that looks interesting. You can create an egg and spoon race by hanging them, by supporting them in other ways from behind, by hiding things behind and propping them up. Those are the things that make the difference, and those are the things that are going to get you work. And there'll always be room for someone who's creative in photography, and they'll always be able to make a living out of it. It's whether you can stand out from the crowd or not. I don't know whether I do or not, but I do so far. So that'll do.
That's one of the best questions we've ever had.
That is. It's a great question. We've had two really good questions the last couple of weeks, haven't we? Right. There we go. There's the assignment for this week. Whoever sends in the most interesting egg and spoon shot is going to get a prize.
Oh, what was the pick from the chat room?
Pick from the chat room is?
Let me know.
Don't know. They're not going to do it. This podcast and all the others is brought to you by UK2.net. If you've got your photography done and you want a website to show it off, why don't you go and hire something from them? Go out, buy yourself a domain through our website, BritishTechNetwork.com. Use the click-through, use the offer code, get 20% off the domain that you purchase. Then go and get yourself a bit of web space as well. You get massive amounts off those. Your first month free if it's a VPN. And then get yourself up with some images. Use Site Builder to put it up, £2.95 a month. Within 10 minutes, you could have 20 of your photos up across 20 pages, showing off your artwork and how good you are. Have a little site that you can use to send the family to. You can have security on it. You can have a sign-in and a login for people that you trust and don't trust. You can tie it into your Facebook account. God, blimey, the possibilities are endless. All you got to do is go to UK2 and buy it, plain and simple. And people that listen to British Tech do buy it. UK2 are over the moon with their association with British Tech. They've supported us now for 3 years. They're going to support us for another two, so that's 5 years under the belt. And you guys buy loads of service from them. They see us as a very positive client alliance partner, if you like, and they want it to continue as much as possible. They give us all our bandwidth in return, and they pick up any of the costs that we've got associated with web. And Sarah does all the administration of it and never has to buy anything else extra. So please support UK2 because they support us. This show would go away without them in a heartbeat. So we are very grateful and so are they. Cheers. Where can we get a hold of you, Christopher?
You can find me at arstechnica.com, where I'm always writing,
sir.
Such clever articles.
Yes.
And there's never comments talking about how terrible of a journalist I am, ever.
Mate, you're asking the wrong person for that. I only wrote two articles and I've been pulled to pieces.
Right.
Funny, actually. I've only ever written bad comments on both you and Chris's articles, but there you go.
And Foxy, where are you, mate?
In the doghouse, I think. I'm Alex G. Fox on Twitter. And can I please add my absolute official congratulations to Chris and Mrs. Chris. Welcome to the greatest club I've ever been a part of.
The baby club, it's the hardest thing you'll ever do, though, dude. Forget about low light shooting. Matt Jim says UK2 rule.
I'm still optimistic, anyway.
Yeah, don't forget the camera in the emergency bag. You make up a little crash pack, mate, and in there's got to be a camera.
I told her we have to budget $2,000 for a new SLR. So
no, you're not helping yourself. You won't be doing that in another month.
She said I can't take all the pictures of the baby with my iPhone. I said, well, I need a new camera.
Fair point.
It's got to be a good one. Right? She wants
buy it now while you can, mate, because you won't have a penny left after it comes out. We'll see you next week. We're recording on Thursday of next week, not Friday. So see you on Thursday afternoon for the photo show then. Take care. See you soon. Bandwidth and hosting for the British Tech Network is provided by UK2.net. Innovative, affordable, and reliable web hosting.